In the book, The Death of Humanity and the Case for Life, which came out in 2016, history professor Dr. Richard Weikart sets out to show that, quote, quite a few prominent intellectuals manifest a high regard for the value of human life, distorted though it may be, that is contrary to their bleak philosophies, which preach the meaninglessness and purposelessness of human existence, end of quote. Dr. Richard Weikart is perhaps best known as the author of the book he wrote called From Darwin to Hitler, and there's another book also called Hitler's Religion. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk about an article that Dr. Weikart wrote recently called Whatever Happened to Human Rights, Morality, and C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man. Dr. Weikart, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Jerry.
Sure. Okay, so first of all, that little short statement that I just made, on the one hand, there are intellectuals who say basically we're just the product of time and chance through evolutionary processes, therefore we really have no value. And on the other hand, they don't live that way because they want to love and they want to think and they want to, you know, whatever. Comment on that contradiction.
Yeah, well, as you're suggesting, they're made in the image of God, too. And so even though they're trying to escape from that in many kinds of ways, they end up with this tension that they're not really able to escape completely. In fact, it's interesting that I'm not the first person to notice this. C.S. Lewis, in fact, who is one of the persons I discuss in that essay, in his book Abolition of Man, and then later in his novel That Hideous Strength, exposes these contradictions and tensions also within the worldview. And I think Francis Schaeffer was very good at that also, in trying to point out the tensions and contradictions within the worldviews of people that have abandoned God.
Okay, you mentioned an evolutionist named Coyne, Jerry Coyne, C-O-Y-N-E, and you talk about his contradictory views of morality. What's that all about?
Well, Jerry Coyne is an evolutionary biologist, or actually he's retired right now. He's emeritus professor at University of Chicago, and he published a book called Faith Versus Fact, where he lambasts religion for trying to impose morality on everyone. But then when you read his own solution to everything, you know, toward the end of the book, he's actually proposing his own moral views. They're different moral views than conventional Christian morality. This is exactly what C.S. Lewis was critiquing in The Abolition of Man. In fact, I'll give you a quotation here from that book where C.S. Lewis says, a great many of those who debunk traditional, or as they would say, sentimental values, have in the background values of their own, which they believe to be immune from the debunking process. So they think that they can sort of impose their own values by trying to undercut everyone else's values by claiming that there's moral relativism, but then they really try to sneak in their own values.
Hmm. All right. Tell us about John Evans and apparently some study that he's done, which in a sense comes to a conclusion different than his own worldview. But tell us about him and let's, you know, flesh that out.
Yeah, John Evans is fascinating because he's a sociologist at the University of California, San Diego, and he decided to do a study to figure out if different people's worldviews have an impact on their support for human rights. Now, he himself is a secularist, but he also wants to uphold human rights, and I believe those two things are in tension. And I kind of suspect, although I don't know this for sure, of course, that when he began this study, which was done by doing surveys of people trying to categorize what worldview they held and then seeing how they responded to human rights. And by the way, this has been published in a book. The book is called What is a Human? What the Answers Mean for Human Rights. It came out in 2016 with Oxford University Press. And I kind of suspect that he was hoping that people with secular worldviews would still be able to uphold human rights, but he actually found the exact opposite. What he found is that people who have theistic worldviews are much more likely to uphold human rights than people who uphold non-theistic worldviews. Again, to me, that's obvious, and it's actually the basis of my own work. In fact, one of the in the introduction to his book, he actually does discuss my book, From Darwin to Hitler, as being one of the things he's sort of taking aim at in looking at, in doing his study and such. So I think he kind of ended up proving what he didn't want to prove. But interestingly, in the last couple of chapters, he tried to sort of backpedal and say, well, maybe we just try to, even within these secular worldviews, we need to try to find a way to, you know, to shore up human rights. But he doesn't really say how to do that.
You know, it's interesting. What triggers in my mind when you mentioned that is there was a fellow named Dr. Brooks. I think it's Arthur Brooks. He was a Syracuse professor, and then he went on to be the head of the American Enterprise Institute. But he wrote a book before he went on to the American Enterprise Institute called Who Really Cares? And I remember talking with him on this radio program at this station, and I was basically asking him about this, and he said, listen, when it comes to generosity and giving, whether it's giving of any kind, including to a religious organization or to, you know, a local charity of some sort, he said, there's one question I can ask, and it will determine with complete reliability, you know, in the vast majority of the cases, how generous somebody is. And here's the question, how often do you go to church? And he said, yeah, those who go often to church are those who tend to be the most generous with their money and then also with their time in terms of volunteering. Sure. And, you know, and he, I remember he gave a specific example between a Christian and an atheist. And there was something like the Christian gives 100 times more or whatever. I forgot what it was, but it was, yeah, it was just astounding. But I guess the secularist, yeah, thinks, well, I'll let the government do it. You know, let the taxes do it.
Right. In other words, yeah, what's interesting there is that the secularist is wanting to take other people's money to be generous,
yeah,
whereas the Christians are using their own money to be generous.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You're right. There are actually a lot of sociological studies that have shown the same thing. I mean, that is not just a one-off thing of Arthur Brooks, but, you know, there's studies that have shown that people that live in states where there's religion is at a higher level and people attend church more often, that they do tend to give more to charitable organizations and such. And so in the issue of human rights that John Evans was looking at, you get the same kind of phenomenon. You know, the people that are religious tend to uphold human rights. Just, you know, the Declaration of Independence says that all men are created equal and are endowed by the Creator with inalienable rights. Well, people who, once they decide that the Creator doesn't exist, most people, or maybe I should say many people, make the next obvious conclusion and say, well, if the Creator doesn't exist, then there must not be any human rights because we're just a cosmic accident here anyway. And so you get then philosophies like Nietzsche's philosophy where he abandons God, but death of God, but then also the death of morality and such. And that's not an uncommon view. And so Evans is not only fighting against people with religious worldviews, but he's also having to come to grips with the fact that many of the people promoting secular worldviews, existentialists, postmodernists and such, they don't believe in human rights either.
Jerry Coyne, that we mentioned earlier, he has a quote here from your article, or you quote him. It says, he says, quote, evolution, quote, says that there's no special purpose for your life because it is a naturalistic philosophy. We have no more extrinsic purpose than a squirrel or an armadillo, end quote. And, you know, when I think of those things, those are animals you sometimes see dead, you know, on the road, roadkill.
Sure. And sometimes people actively hunt them as well.
Yeah, that's true.
But, which suggests that we do think there's more purpose to human life because we don't go around hunting humans. Well, unfortunately, a few people might do it, but even Coyne realizes that's not right, and Coyne doesn't promote that. It's interesting, too, because Coyne, in one of the things, and this is where I see some attention in his thinking, too, and it's attention, I think, in a lot of secular thought. There's a lot of people promoting assisted suicide and euthanasia in secular circles, and Coyne is one of those. Coyne does embrace euthanasia. In fact, he makes the comment that we do it for our dogs. We have compassion on our dogs, don't we? So, you know, why shouldn't we do this for humans as well? And so one of my responses to that, and in fact, I've written this in some articles that I've written too. I don't think it's in my book, Death of Humanity, but one of my responses to that is, well, Jerry Coyne, you know, what if we went into New York City and just rounded up, you know, all of the homeless people and incarcerated them and until we could find a home for them, and we'll also sterilize them, you know, to make sure they don't have any more children. If that's, and Jerry Coyne, of course, would erupt with, that's inhumane. No, of course we're not going to do that. And I know Jerry Coyne wouldn't accept that kind of public policy, but what I just described is exactly what we do to dogs.
Let's talk about the Nazis and Hitler for a moment. And the reason I ask is because sometimes people will, you know, mistakenly say, oh, well, Hitler was a Christian, or, you know, the Nazis were Christians or whatever. And that's so untrue. But why don't you talk about it definitively? And what was their worldview when it comes to humanity? Obviously, it was a very low one.
Yeah, well, interestingly, of course, Hitler had a very high view of some kinds of humanity. That is what he identified as the Aryans or the Germans. He thought he had a very high view of them, and he thought that they were the ones that were going to bring evolutionary progress about by getting rid of what he considered the inferior ones. So he had a very low view of much of humanity, but again, based on this notion of human inequality, though, which is again, once there's no God, then you just have to determine on your own which traits are valuable. And so he identified certain traits of intelligence and the things that he thought that the Aryans had more of than other races. Of course, he's wrong about that too, but nonetheless. So Hitler believed that these races had evolved over long periods of time and that they were unequal, that they were engaged in a natural struggle for existence. And because of that, the ones that were superior should thrive and should outcompete the other ones that should die out. And so anyone that died, that's just, you know, they were just an inferior ones. And so let's help nature along by killing off those that we identify as inferior.
Okay, now what about the charge that Hitler was supposedly a Christian or believed in God?
Yeah, he may have believed in some kind of God. There's a lot of debate about that. And I actually try to, in analyzing his work, I think he's closest to a pantheist. That is, a person who believes that nature is God. So he talks about God in kind of a vague sense and such, but he clearly wasn't a Christian in the sense that most people would identify as a Christian. For example, he rejected the idea that Jesus was the Son of God, that Jesus did miracles, that Jesus rose from the dead. He totally dismissed the idea of any personal afterlife. So if you want to identify him as a Christian, it's certainly kind of Christianity that no one would be recognizable. The only thing that could even possibly become close to thinking that he might have some identification with Christianity is that he did like Jesus, but he only liked the Jesus who was with a whip in the temple driving the money-grubbing Jews. That's the way Hitler's described it anyway, driving the money-grubbing Jews out of the temple. That was the Jesus that he liked. He didn't like the Jesus that said that you're supposed to love one another and have compassion and help the poor and help the sick and help the weak. Though he totally despised that element of Christianity. And he continually criticized Christianity for helping the weak and helping the poor and helping those who are in need.
All right. As far as C.S. Lewis and his view about man, since that's the kind of the overall arching theme, mm-hmm. and he wrote his work, just as you point out, the tail end of World War II. But how about a quick comment about C.S. Lewis? We have about 1 minute left.
Yeah, That Hideous Strength, actually, I really highly recommend reading that as a novel. But it really resonates with a lot of the totalitarian systems that were around when he was writing it in the 1940s, both the communists and the fascists of Europe and the Nazis. And I think it has a really poignancy about that, in showing what happens when humans think that they can basically engineer other humans, when they think that we can control and dominate other people, and through manipulative techniques. We think people are just a product of their environment or product of their biology. If that's all humans are, then we can just manipulate those things genetically, or we can manipulate the environment, and we can create humanity into what we want it to be. And that's both of the Nazi project was to do that on a biological level. The communist project was to do that on an environmental level. Change the economy and we'll reshape humanity.
Wow. Yeah, here's a quote from Hitler. From C.S. Lewis, or actually one of the bad characters in his book that you mentioned. If science is really given a free hand, it can now take over the human race and recondition it, make man a really efficient animal. And as you say, we've seen that happen over and over in the 20th century. We're basically out of time. Is there a website that you could refer us to for your writings and so forth?
Well, if you want to read that particular article, it's on the equip.org website, which is for the Christian Research Journal. So you go to Christian Research Journal, and the title of that article is Whatever Happened to Human Rights? running into that particular article, you can go there. There's also a DarwinToHitler.com for some of my other works.
Okay, Dr. Richard Weigert, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, great talking to you.
Okay, bye-bye now.